Welcome everyone to the Pantheon. I'm your host, Ray.
Somehow my daughter Amelia is involved. Please find her.
Seen this girl?
What's in it for me?
Oh, we can do this the easy way. No! I'm currently doing it the easy way.
Whatever happened to offering me $20?
It's the recession.
Hey, can you behave like a professional?
I'm sorry.
She's in danger, man. We have to do something about it.
She's dead.
She's not dead.
She's not dead.
Before we go solving the crime of the century, let's deal with the rotting corpse.
We got a plan.
The film is The Nice Guys, and on the marquee, it's been called a comedy crime drama starring Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. It's a neo-noir, and it's a send-up to other classic neo-noir films, such as There's Chinatown with Jack Nicholson and Faye Dunaway and L.A. Confidential. And to prove that fact, they even cast the lead actors from L.A. Confidential into The Nice Guys, just to hammer in the point of what they wanted to portray. So much so that there isn't too much of a dissimilarity between the characters of L.A. Confidential and The Nice Guys. You have your classic representations here. You have your femme fatale in Kim Basinger, you have your cynical yet bumbling detective in Ryan Gosling, and you have your anti-hero thug for hire in Russell Crowe. Now, the movie has a runtime of 1 hour and 59 minutes, just a minute shy of the full 2 hour mark, and it's written and directed by Shane Black. For me personally, the name Shane Black should have stood out for me from the get-go, but to many of you, our listeners, as well as myself, Shane Black is one of those creative forces in Hollywood who's been around for a number of decades and has made his benchmarks throughout Hollywood. He went on to write or create the stories for all four Lethal Weapon movies. And after the fourth one, he kind of dropped off the face of the planet for about several years and came back with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which not only did he write, but directed, which starred Val Kilmer and Robert Downey Jr., to whom he would direct and write again for Iron Man 3. And now we fast forward to 2016, and his fourth film that he's written and directed is The Nice Guys, and is a send-up to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang in many respects, too.
Three drinks, tops.
Yeah, that's why you can't walk straight.
Oh, excuse me, I'm carrying a dead body, and I have a schwanz in my face, so I'm sorry I'm not Baryshnikov.
You can't even say Baryshnikov! You did, didn't you? You fell down the bill. You get drunk, you lose your gun, you take your header off the balcony, and now you're going to tell me it's like a hallowed time on a detective ploy, right?
It was very slippery up there, okay? I was in the pool.
You were in the pool?
Yeah.
Why?
I had to question the mermaids. What were you doing while I was working? Thank you.
Let's get rid of this guy.
Black has put a lot of work into this film. Now, I'll be honest here, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of Ryan Gosling or Russell Crowe, especially in the idea of the way it was marketed as being a comedy detective duo set in 1977 Los Angeles. Let's be honest, Gosling doesn't come across as a comedic actor, though his roots started off in comedy and in entertainment, being part of the Musketeers with, you know, JT and Britney Spears in that area, and going on to making his breakthrough role in Breaker High, which was, I guess the comparison would be Sean Penn's Fast Times at Richmond High start, because Sean Penn is not considered to be at all a comedic actor or a funny guy, though his breakthrough role was Fast Times. Same thing with Ryan Gosling. I think he has the same trajectory. He's considered now a very serious actor, yet I could see the parallels in that. And vis-a-vis with Russell Crowe, I mean, this guy, though he is, you know, Maximus from Gladiator, and he's done various roles, he's also known behind the scenes as being a very aggressive and coarse individual. And being an Aussie, he's a naturally tough guy. He's had stories of anger issues, throwing a telephone at a person, and yelling at PAs to the point where they're about to cry. So the image of what we know behind the scenes and what we know in terms of the actual characters that they portrayed goes against type in terms of this film. So going into this film, I had a preconceived notion that I wasn't going to like it, though I came out of this film pleasantly surprised. Now, a lot of my friends who've seen this film gave it a thumbs down. They didn't like it for various reasons, and I think, like myself, had a preconceived notion of Gosling and Russell Crowe, and this being pigeonholed as a comedy of some sort. And I'm going to say, on behalf of Gosling, he really did his work. I mean, he really accessed his knowledge of comedic film but implementing various techniques and homages to comedic legends like Lou Costello and Buster Keaton, because there are certain attributes in this film that send up to those comedic legends. And in that sense, I have to give him props for putting the work into this and trying to sell the physical comedy, especially in this film, because there's a lot of physical comedy that he does, especially at the end, the big climactic scene where it is kind of nutty. If you think about the context of what you're seeing, it is quite out there. But to go back to the movie, it takes place in 1977 in Hollywood, and that even in itself is a little strange because the film was actually shot in Atlanta, Georgia, and the music in this movie, though it is late 70s music, and the movie was depicted to be 1977, 85 to 90% of the music that we heard in the soundtrack is music that was released as singles or as part of an album that came out in either 78, 79, or 81, not 1977. So for those of you who are the musical aficionados of pinpointing historical music, it's a little bit off the mark, but Shane Black as a writer-director really exercised many themes and perspectives and techniques in this film, to which I, as a film buff, an audience member who loves to go to the movies and experience films, and as a student who studies films, to see what he was trying to put on the screen, I actually appreciated it and took in the little idiosyncratic points he placed in this. Having polar opposites sort of somehow marry each other and still be on the same screen. From the very start of this film, we see a young little boy sneak into his parents' house and grab his father's stash of pornographic magazines, only to dash out, grab a glass of milk, and to look through his dad's secret stash, where suddenly a car smashes through the house and out the back and down this, I would say, slight ravine. And we see the only survivor of the vehicle is this young woman who smashed through the front windshield, and she is naked. And as the boy runs out to investigate what has happened, he notices that the girl on the hood of the car is the exact same woman in the magazine. And by the way, quote unquote, the character's name is Misty Mountains, which is completely irrelevant at this point. And at this point, which I find very interesting, is that we have, a very young boy who sees a woman who is completely helpless, naked, and by and large, posed in a position, it's almost verbatim, like the image that he sees in the magazine that's in front of him. So now we have that kind of supercharged, surreal instance of fantasy and reality, that, and the line is blurred, and what is going through the child's mind when he sees the magazine, and then he sees the woman helpless in front of him, and what is the thing that this child will do, because it determines the maturity of his mind, what he's thinking at this point, considering that he has the wherewithal of stealing his father's pornography, and then boom, he is in a situation where there is no consequences for him, and this line of reality and fiction is completely blurred. And what he does is an act of true innocence in the face of it all. And it's a juxtaposition of porn in light of innocence, of doing the right thing. And this theme is actually peppered throughout the movie in the body of Holly, which is Gosling's daughter, played by Andre Rice, who is phenomenal in this film, and playing it so naively, yet wise beyond her years. Because in more than one occasion, she is thrown into an environment, one of them being pornography, and she's not swayed, and she actually becomes sort of the moral consciousness for Russell Crowe, and almost sometimes their parental figure slash equal partner in terms of responsibilities to her dad, played by Ryan Gosling, at various points in this movie. Ryan Gosling plays Holland March, a detective who is now widowed. He has a 13-year-old daughter. He plays a morally ambiguous detective with the concept of earning money has no filter. And in this film, Ryan does channel his inner Buster Keaton, Abbott and Costello slash Peter Sellers, Jacques Cousteau, in certain scenes, which really bring some levity to the overall film. And the story really is about a missing person, a lady by the name of Amelia, who is probably Misty Mountains, the girl who was found on the hood of the car at the beginning of this film, and is believed possibly to be dead because all the other people involved in her last film are either dead or have just been killed.
The guy who beat up my dad.
Hey, no. Sucker punched your dad. Big difference. But don't worry. He just did it for money.
You beat people up and charge money?
Yeah. Sad, isn't it?
That's really your job?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
So, how much would you charge to beat up my friend Janet?
What?
How much you got?
$30.
Oh, $30.
Apple pie.
Is she a big girl?
She's tall.
All right.
Super annoying.
Apple pie.
She's always mean to me.
$30. That's good. This conversation is over.
We're just talking.
One of the acute storytellings in this film that got me invested and I think helped me change my mind of not hating this movie as I was watching it was the fact that, I guess, as a plot device that Black has written in, was that Ryan Gosling is a bumbling detective and he's really not performing at the caliber or at the expectation of someone in his profession. And as a result, not only Jackson Healy, which is Russell Crowe's character, but his daughter is starting to lose faith in his ability and at one point beginning to lose respect and actually giving up on him. And not only is the daughter at the verge of giving up on her own father and losing respect in his ability, and we as an audience are feeling self-doubt towards this person's ability to perform as a detective, and we're losing respect for him as an individual, and we're actually just having less and less faith in his portrayal as far as the character of Holland March. Then suddenly, in the 11th hour, Black is able to write something extraordinary, showing that March can be a great detective by finding a clue and holding on to that one clue that could break the case wide open. He finds the clue, which neither Jackson Healy, Russell Crowe's character, or his daughter, or anyone else realizes, and he has this incredible insight of how he was able to deduce the clue and get one step closer to solving this case. This has got to be a very important piece of evidence because they're really hanging on to this one idea for a while now. So it's got to pay off. And lo and behold, as we as an audience are now gaining faith in Ryan Gosling's character, we find out that when we get to the location of where the next clue will reveal, where is Amelia, the person who's missing, we find out that he actually read the clue completely wrong. So we go back to square one and we kind of give a sigh of not relief, but just aggravation of we can't believe we've just been being hoodwinked that this guy has actually turned the corner and we should be more invested in this guy. And we did. And that was one of the things that made me took some interest because, as I mentioned before, I came into this film not expecting much out of this and it was kind of on a downward spiral in terms of what I was going to get out of this. And now, though it may not be overwhelmingly positive in terms of my overall experience with this movie, I guess to a certain extent, I was subconsciously invested into the characters and into the movie. I will give this movie a 3.5 stars.
Buford, mailbag song. Hit it!
Letters. I get letters. So many letters.
The movie relies on the buddy bromance of two main characters, and it's just not there. Crowe always looks at Gosling's character as if he's from Mars, while Gosling can't decide if he wants his character to be naive or just plain stupid. In one scene when he's afraid, he pulls a reaction that was old when Lou Costello invented it. And you know the words won't come out of his mouth by the squeaking sounds he emits. And another flaw is introduced in March's 13-year-old daughter, Holly, played by Angourie Rice, into the mix. The fact that she's involved in too many action sequences means March is up for the worst parent of the year. The movie is rated R for profanity, violence, and nudity. And then Cooper goes on by saying, I'm not saying Crowe and Gosling didn't try, but their efforts were wasted. I expected more and I got much less. The Nice Guys doesn't play nicely for those people who were attending. I score The Nice Guys a not-so-nice 4 out of 10. Okay, and on the over, we have one of my favorite film reviewers, Linda Cook from the Quad City Times in Davenport, Iowa. And she writes, The Nice Guys is a mystery for grown-ups that's also part buddy film, dark comedy, and action flick. And she talks about Shane Black. Shane Black's first film was, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. She says it resembles the tone of that of those characters, which it does do. Crow and Gosling have an entertaining chemistry. They understand and respect each other, even though they don't always agree on the right approach. There's a certain amount of wistfulness on both characters, both of whom understand the harsh world in which Holly is growing up. Both question whether they're good guys or bad guys and turn to the wise beyond her years, Holly, for her opinion. Another nice touch of movies aficionados is seeing Crow and Kim Basinger again on the screen for the first time since being in the noir film L.A. Confidential. The nods of the 70s also are a lot of fun, including references to the Waltons. Additionally, Gosling's character keeps his gun in a cookie jar, just like Jim Rockford did, and Gosling's Detective Agency ad in the Yellow Pages bears quite a resemblance to the Rockford Files ad. There's also a funny running gag about the appearances of President Nixon and a great scene in connection with the protest. And Cook concludes by saying, boogie on out on this one. You'll be glad you did. She gives this movie 3.5 out of 4 stars, and she says it's worth watching. On Rotten Tomatoes, it was given 91% by critics, 85% by top critics, and the audience has scored this movie 81%. Which is really high considering the film opened up in fourth place. It was knocked out by Angry Birds, which debuted at number one, knocking Captain America's Civil War into second. After a 3-week run, and The Nice Guys was also in competition with our neighbors to Sorority Rising, which was also released that same weekend, and that was in third place. So it did open up in the top five. The fifth being The Jungle Book. It made about $36 million altogether. I do think The Nice Guys finished last, but it does have a heart of gold, which is second best. And so with that, we'll talk to you later.
To Los Angeles. Somehow, my daughter Amelia is involved. Please, find her.
Seen this girl?
What's in it for me?
Oh, we can do this the easy way. No! You're currently doing it the easy way.
Whatever happened to offering me $20?
It's the recession.
Hey, can you behave like a professional?
I'm sorry.
She's in danger, man. We have to do something about it.
She's dead.
She's not dead.
She's not dead!
Before we go solving the crime of the century, let's deal with the rotting corpse.
We got a plan. Run.